The greatest trick the devil ever pulled was convincing the world he didn't exist.
I saw a pale horse.
The beast.
We're told in the Book of Revelation.
This is not a human child.
Isn't an angel?
Satan! Armageddon is almost upon us.
Order the use of nuclear weapons.
The world is a fine place and worth fighting for.
From one end of the world to the other, I will oppose you.
They're here.
Welcome to the end of the world.
Wrestling not against flesh and blood, but against powers and principalities. This is PID Radio.
Where the snow has finally melted away in the heartland, I'm Derek Gilbert.
I'm Sharon Gilbert, everybody, and welcome to our humble bunker. And we pray that you're not bringing any kind of bugs in with you, because Derek doesn't eat anymore. He's had bugs aplenty.
The warning should have been, beware the Ides of February.
You know, we were trying to start back after our little vacation yesterday, mm-hmm. but unfortunately, the health of our beloved Derek prevented that.
Yeah, I was...
Because you don't want to throw up on the mic.
Well, thankfully...
You don't.
No, you don't.
You don't want to have to clean that up.
During my radio career, I've come perilously close to doing that a couple of times. But, you know, the show must go on.
You know, that's it all depends on how bad the show is, actually. We may not make it through this one.
Well, there you go. Well, today is February 16th of 2011, and we have, boy, all kinds of things going on here with the bunker. In fact, I was home again today just sort of recovering, because even though I feel much, much better today than yesterday, and thank you for your prayers.
Oh, you know, we've had so many people praying for you. I mean, all over Facebook. Thank you so much, everybody.
It is deeply appreciated and definitely helped. I felt much better by this morning at when the alarm went off. So I thought I could tough it out and go into work this morning. But since at midnight last night, underneath two comforters with the sweatshirt, T-shirt, warm sweatpants and a pair of socks, I was still shivering. I thought, you know, maybe 6 hours later, I wasn't quite ready to go back.
I thought the bed was just, you know, having an earthquake or something. You know, one of the...
it was Captain Howdy.
one of the people who commented to the Facebook post about your illness said that when she and her husband get sick like that, they have the chills, mm-hmm. that they just say throw another cat on the bed.
Yeah. Well,
we only have the one dog.
That's right. Sam T. Dachson, don't cotton to that. He did help me, though, on Monday afternoon.
He did.
Yeah.
I've never known you to be that, you know, where you had that sort of shivering. I've never seen that in you.
No, it was kind of unusual. Thankfully, since marrying you, I noticed that I get sick far less often than I used to. I wonder why that is.
Could
be something to do with happiness.
You know, I agree. I don't get sick very often either. In fact, last night, I thought I was catching what you have, and so far, okay. So,
well,
praise God.
We had talked about some changes coming to the bunker, and I mentioned this on View from the Bunker this past Friday night.
We haven't actually made the announcement, have we?
Not here on PID
Not
Radio.
Not officially. My goodness. We've been talking about it for so long that you forget.
So we should announce that the bunker will once again be moving. For those of you who've been following the bunker since the early days of PID Radio back in 2005.
Those playing the home game.
Yeah, this will be bunker number, let's see, there was Manchester, there was
one, two,
in Columbia, and so 1, 2, 3
here.
So this will be bunker number 7.
One in St. Louis.
Two in Columbia.
Three in Shelbyville.
So this will be bunker number 7.
It will.
Yeah.
7. That's a good number.
We're relocating to Central Illinois. I was offered a promotion by my employer, and we've decided to accept. It will mean a change in our schedules, or at least, you know, from personal standpoint, because I won't be going to an office. The office will essentially be the inside of the car, as I'll be moving to outside sales and driving a lot. There will be some times when I will be away overnight, so PID Radio will have to accommodate that while on those nights when I'm not there. But should be home every evening to continue PID Radio per our schedule, which
I think
is our
purpose. That'll be fun. Well, we'll see how it goes, and we're looking for a place that will provide us with a dedicated space for the bunker, mm-hmm. Which we have now, but it's still bunker / family room. So when kids come over, and we have them over quite a bit, as you well know, our pastor's kids come over to visit, mm-hmm. and we cannot keep certain equipment up constantly.
Right.
And that includes the lights that we have purchased for thank you to those who have helped to underwrite that, that we were able to get. And these lights and the cameras will help us to do the video that we plan on doing coming up here soon. You're going to be forced to watch us.
So PID video, which we've been talking about since the end of last year.
You can close your eyes and just listen,
listen
to the sound.
That's right. The reason we haven't done it yet is because we've not wanted to assemble, well, partly because, again, we don't have a dedicated space that we can close off, first of all.
And it's really important to do that because those light stands and the lights, they're a little delicate. And I don't want to break those.
Sure.
They weren't cheap.
And so we didn't want to set things up with the green screen and everything like that and then have to disassemble it again because we've known that this move was potentially in the works for over 2 months now.
And don't you want to see us sitting in front of, the riots that were taking place in Egypt?
With the green screen, yes.
With our little desk sitting here in front of everybody.
Yeah, we're not actually brave enough to go there.
No.
Or well-financed enough. But
no, but we're brave enough to put them on our green screen.
That's right. So the area we probably will locate is somewhere around Effingham, Illinois, which is pretty much, as much as we keep looking elsewhere, and we had actually looked, as far away as the St. Louis metro area, because that'll still be part of this territory that I'll be covering.
Your boss didn't cotton to that.
Well, he's the former outside rep for Illinois, and he knows the lay of the land, and he kept saying, no, Effingham. Effingham
and
is
he's
really
an officer in the military.
Yes.
You don't
yes.
mess with him.
That's right. He's accustomed to,
getting his own
getting
way.
His own way. But he's very good at what he does, and I enjoy working for him because I've worked for some really bad bosses in the course of my career, and when you find someone who tells you straight, even if it's not sugar-coated the way, you might enjoy it, if he tells you straight and he makes promises and then delivers on them and doesn't make promises that he doesn't deliver on, that's a really good boss to work for.
He's you've talked about him a number of times. He sounds like a great boss.
Yeah.
I've not had the pleasure to meet him, but I assume some of these days, one of these days soon, I'll probably
will happen. And I've met the crew down in Evansville, which is the office I'll be reporting to. And I've like those guys real well, like the crew here in Shelbyville.
Wait a minute,
I've never met
this boss. Are you sure he exists? I've never actually seen you in your office.
That's true.
You only come down to the reception desk or meet me outside. Do you really work there?
Money just shows up in the account. So anyway, the one interesting feature about Effingham that we've noticed, and it seems like a very, by all accounts, a very pleasant, quiet, relatively small rural Illinois community, conveniently located to the interstates. It also happens to be the site of the 200-foot cross at the crossroads, which I noticed during a trip back to Illinois for Nicole's graduation a couple of years ago. I had to snap a picture with my cell phone as I was driving past because it was so striking. A huge stainless steel cross that stands about 200 feet tall. Now, it's actually not 200 feet tall exactly. It's 198 feet tall, which is 66 plus 66 plus 66.
Yes, and it's on Pike Street.
Yeah, on Pike Street, and the arms are 113 feet wide.
We could get into that, but you know what? It just,
I still think
assume that all is well.
Landmark,
yeah, exactly. No matter why they lifted up the cross.
Yes, the fact
if you lift up Christ and him crucified. If I be lifted up, he said, I will draw all men unto me.
That's right. Amen. So we're looking at this as a
an unqualified raid.
Exactly. So anyway, by the end of March, we will be hopefully, or prayerfully speaking, in the new bunker. So we're spending a lot of time looking at that.
So pray that everything goes well. We originally had planned on renting, but it looks like the Lord is working it out so that we might be able to buy there. So pray that all goes well.
Yes. So anyway, while this has been going on,
in the meanwhile.
Meanwhile, Egypt fell.
When we last left Mubarak.
Yeah.
May have been, fighting for his life. I mean, there were rumors flying around there that he was not in Sharm el-Sheikh, that he actually was in Germany.
Yeah, that he had suffered a stroke and was in a coma. Or was in a coma, don't know about the stroke, but there were reports coming out of Bahrain that had been translated into English by a couple of other news sources, Haaretz in Israel, for one, that reported that Mubarak, after he stepped down, had gone into a coma, and that, in fact, he had fainted twice, according to Haaretz, quoting this source in Bahrain, during his speech turning power over to Omar Suleiman. So as of now, we don't really know how things play out. We do know that Field Marshal Tantawi is the de facto head of state. The military tribunal is essentially running the country. Why this is all happening now, we don't really know. There was that story a couple of weeks ago from The Telegraph that said that, according to the WikiLeaks cable published by The Telegraph, the United States had been assisting at least one of the organizers of the protest who planned, and this was back in 2008, who had planned to take down the government by, surprise, 2011. So, and why do it now in the spring when he was coming up for election in the fall? Why the United States government intruding and saying essentially to Mubarak, nope, you have to go now?
He was coming up for election in the fall?
Right. Well,
he's been in power for over 30 years. I mean,
yeah.
Come on.
You know how elections go over there in many of the states in that part of the world. But why now? Instead of just saying, look, just run a free and fair election in September and just be done with it. Why did the United States feel compelled to interject? Why were the American media cheerleading? Chris Matthews of MSNBC, I heard an audio clip from him a couple of weeks ago saying, essentially, I hope the protesters keep it up until he's out. You know, why would the American media feel compelled to cheerlead on one side or the other in something happening on the other part of the world?
You don't suppose that somebody told him to, do you?
It was bipartisan.
That's what I'm saying.
Bill O'Reilly on Friday night was talking about Mubarak's...
Think about it. I have two arms.
Yeah, that's true.
There's only one head controlling both arms.
That's true. Saying that this was a victory for the good guys. And a good guys meaning the United States. Now, how did we win if, in fact...
It ends up with the Muslim Brotherhood in control.
Or at least with a share of control, right.
Well, this all happens just as Iran is steaming toward. In fact, they're probably going through the Suez Canal as
even as we record this, yeah. Israel is not pleased by this. They're not thrilled with Field Marshal Tantawi. As near as I can tell, it's always hard to read between the lines when you're reading the stuff that actually makes it into the mainstream press. But, Field Marshal Tantawi has been on the losing side of three wars against Israel. But Israel is even less pleased that Iranian warships are sailing through the Suez Canal.
Oh, I know. Well, I mean, with regard to what's going on in Egypt, I would direct everybody to PID News for today. I've linked to an article at an English version of Der Spiegel, and there's an article there about a man who is considered the televangelist for the Muslim Brotherhood. So if you want to think of him as the Rick Warren of Muslim Brotherhood. He has a television program. His name is Youssef Al-Qaradawi. And you like that? Roldar. Yeah. And I don't know if it's rolled in that language or not, honestly. It just felt good to roll it. But this gentleman apparently is sort of middle of the road. He speaks. He's sort of a combination of Phil Donahue and Dear Abby.
And that's how Der Spiegel described him?
No, it's just they refer to him as Dear Abby, but he is, he's got an afternoon talk show, for goodness sake.
And
here's how the article opens up. He is a hypermarket of dogma, dispensing advice on subjects ranging from mother's milk to suicide bombing.
That's interesting.
Mm-hmm.
And he does this on television in Egypt every day.
He does this on Al Jazeera. He's on all kind. I mean, he's in all these homes, and he is in many ways the voice of the Muslim Brotherhood.
The father figure of Egypt's Muslim Brotherhood, according to Der Spiegel.
Mm-hmm.
Well, they had asked him to serve as their official mouthpiece, if you will, representative. Their public face in Egypt a few years ago, but he decided that was too limiting and focused on delivering the message through television, which certainly is an effective way of communicating
in
a modern world.
This is the message that the Muslim Brotherhood is trying to get the world to believe. I mean, this gentleman represents, look, we're no different than you guys.
And the point Der Spiegel makes is that Al-Qaradawi is a modernist by comparison to many in the Islamic world. He teaches that you can be faithful to Islam and still serve in the modern world. If you hear some background noise there, it's because we've got all the windows open. It's 63 degrees here
Fahrenheit.
And we're not closing the windows today. It has been a long, cold
winter. Well, here's my question to you, and you can, you know, how you think this is going to play out, because isn't the Muslim Brotherhood a Sunni-based organization?
Yes, it is.
Okay, we've got the Iranians who are plowing through the Suez Canal right now, which I think was closed off and on during the riots. I assume it's open now, but Iran is primarily Shiite.
Yes. And Egypt and Saudi Arabia have more or less been the opposite, the polar opposite, you know, in terms of power to Iran in the Muslim world, the Arab world. Well,
you know,
I shouldn't say Arab world because Iran is Persian, not Arab.
Well, let's look at the various things that are taking place in this whole Middle East region. I mean, we have Egypt fell, essentially. It's in military hands. Muslim Brotherhood Sunni may take over soon. We had the sudden, at the end of that, day 18 to day 19, we started getting these rumors about how Mubarak was dead. At the same time, we had rumors that King Abdullah of Saudi Arabia was dead.
And now we're getting... And this, you've been telling me about this for the last couple of days while I've been, you know, focusing on just, you know, getting warm. this started with riots in Tunisia.
Yes.
And it spread to Yemen and, you know, Egypt.
It's Yemen. It's in Libya.
Jordan.
It's been in Algiers.
Right.
It's in Saudi Arabia. It's in Jordan, as you say, the tribesmen, the leaders.
Bedouins.
The Bedouin tribesmen. I'll come in again. The Bedouins of Jordan, who have backed the king for decades, are now saying they're not going to back him anymore.
Yeah, this is really...
If you go to Twitter and just put in the hashtag riot or demonstration or protest, you will get so much stuff. And you'll see all the countries that are either planning or implementing now demonstrations, riots, protests.
It's spreading all throughout the Arab world, which
is
really not.
And it's even going on, and this is for a different reason, in Panama, of all things. The Ngabe Indians there they're angry about some changes in mining, strip mining. So they want to protect the environment, understandably, and they apparently, if I understand it correctly, have been actually standing in the way of progress for the Pan American Highway, which was supposed to go from the tip of South America all the way to Alaska. And it's sort of, there's a little gap there in Panama.
Ah, and the Indians are kind of holding things up.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, we'll see what happens. Either they will, you know, someone will make them an offer they can't refuse, or
well, at last count, there were about 15,000 of them who were protesting. I mean, it's not like a dozen or so guys out there. No, no, they're pretty strong numbers.
You look at the history of Latin America and America's intervention over the last 100 years or so, and somebody will make them an offer they can't refuse, way or the other, probably.
Well, speaking of offers you can't refuse and protection rackets, you were telling me earlier about something that's totally not connected to the – well, in a way it is connected because of if I'm thinking what you are, the stories that went on about Tunisia. But tell me what you found.
Well, I've mentioned his name a number of times, and I do – want to get in touch with this gentleman and see if he'll consent to an interview. Glenn Greenwald, who's a columnist at Salon.com. And actually, there are two stories of his recent pieces that I'd like to talk about. The first one relates to WikiLeaks. And we mentioned WikiLeaks sort of because of the cable the Telegraph published on American help with the Egyptian protests. He published a piece just the other day that is really bizarre. It's come to light. And it's been reported in a number of other places, including the Tech Herald, Forbes, Huffington Post, a number of other tech-related websites, that a computer executive security firm, H.B. Gary, one of the top executives there, a fellow named Aaron Barr, boasted in an interview with the Financial Times that H.B. Gary had infiltrated and begun to expose Anonymous, which is the group of pro-WikiLeaks hackers that had launched these cyber attacks against groups that were taking action against WikiLeaks, like PayPal and MasterCard for shutting down their accounts, Visa, Amazon.com, and so forth. So in retaliation, Anonymous hacked this computer security firm, H.B. Gary, published 50,000 of their emails online, and hacked Twitter and other online accounts. Among the emails was a report published by H.B. Gary in conjunction with several other online security firms, including one called Palantir Technologies, which is very interesting.
Yeah. Anyone who has read The Lord of the Rings knows exactly what that is.
Yeah. And these reports described tactics to destroy WikiLeaks. The report, according to these emails, was part of a proposal that was to be submitted to Bank of America through its outside law firm, Hunton and Williams. Now, there have been rumors and some news reports that WikiLeaks has some dirt on Bank of America that's kind of holding back, and including, you know, demonstrating possible corruption and fraud. The New York Times said in a report last month that bank officials are really taking this threat seriously. Well, this proposal suggested numerous ways that Bank of America could destroy WikiLeaks, some of them potentially illegal, like planting fake documents with WikiLeaks and then attacking them when they were published, or creating a concern over the security of the site, cyber attacks against the infrastructure, a media campaign to push the radical and reckless nature of WikiLeaks activities. Many of these proposals, interestingly enough, also come from a secret 2008 Pentagon plan to destroy WikiLeaks. But interestingly enough, one of the sections of this report outlined a plan to attack and discredit Glenn Greenwald, the columnist who is writing this article that I'm summarizing. And a graph was presented that showed an organizational chart demonstrating, you know, showing the interconnected links between Greenwald and a number of other targets, including a New York Times reporter, a reporter for The Guardian in the UK, and so forth. So anyway, the thing about this is that it sounds absurd, but when you start digging into it, you realize that H.B. Gary is a pretty well-connected organization that has done, and some of the other firms connected too, like Palantir Technologies, have done a fair amount of work for the United States government and other large private corporations. It becomes a little darker and more disturbing. The fact that all of this came out only because Anonymous, the hacking group, hacked into H.B. Gary's email account and found this stuff, similar to the way they found that, you know, WikiLeaks found out, you know, what was going on with the climate.
So we've got white hat hackers attacking black hat hackers.
Sort of, yeah. It really is disturbing. How often does this sort of thing go on where you've got high tech, politically well connected, and well funded cybersecurity firms going after targets on behalf of major corporations like Bank of America?
Do you remember back in the old days? I was alive then. Back in the old days, King Arthur and the whole bunch, back in the medieval times, they would undermine a city. They would actually dig under the city and then come up and open the gates and let their guys in.
Yeah.
I believe that cyber warfare is going on all over the place, and it's the equivalent of undermining. Instead of attacking with our men, with our fleets, with our planes, we're attacking you from underneath. We're sneaking in. And the United States has a cyber warfare division now. They've been touting it all over the place for about a decade.
And apparently companies that are willing to hire their services out to this cyber warfare command.
And a lot of them hire these hackers.
Yeah, sure, absolutely.
In fact, that's one of the things I'm sure that it's sort of like putting your resume out there if you hack into the Defense Department. What's interesting about all of this
is you essentially are seeing that the functions of the federal government have been largely privatized. And so you've got this you could call it cross-pollinization. You could also call it incestuous relationship between companies like Palantir and H.B. Gary. And as far as I understand the article, Palantir Technologies has apologized to Glenn Greenwald and ceased all contact and communication with H.B. Gary.
We'll put
a link to the article so you can see all of this in detail, because I'm just giving you a bare bones outline of this story because of the implications of this. So,
well, I'm going to click read later on this, so we'll go to Instapaper so you can take a look at it. But there's an article here where that quotes Julian Assange as saying that the Bank of America documents are, to quote the headline, a snore.
Yeah.
He says there's nothing to see here. This all reminds me of what we've talked about for years, and that is the Promise Software Michael Reconosciuto stuff that, that goes way back before the internet, that they were planting all sorts of undermining data worms and Trojan horses into bank software, business software. Mm-hmm. So the cyber warfare was, it was starting way back when.
Yeah. And it's only illegal, this kind of cyber warfare and these cyber crimes of, you know, hacking into the intellectual property of other people and entities is only illegal when it's being done by people the government disapproves of.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what the ultimate takeaway is from this article. If you were challenging those in authority, like WikiLeaks has done, like certain journalists have done, like Glenn Greenwald, then it's okay to smear you by planting false documents and committing fraud and slander and libel against you. That's legal. That's okay. That's good. But when WikiLeaks publishes something, that's declared illegal by the Department of Justice, and they want to prosecute.
But remember, WikiLeaks, you and I believe that WikiLeaks has to actually controlled leak. It's being permitted to expose certain people to prosecution or embarrassment. It reminds me, you and I were talking earlier. I saw a documentary last night about pioneers in television, and it was talking about Johnny Carson and Dick Cavett and Joey Bishop, Merv Griffin. With regard to Dick Cavett, they were talking about how he had so many really controversial people on there, Jane Fonda, and people like that, you know, that were considered sometimes outlaws. And he was apparently dissing Nixon left and right.
Right.
And they're in the Nixon tapes. President Nixon actually names Cavett. He asks, who is this guy? Who is this guy? Can't we stop him? And the guy essentially says, no, he's really putting it to you every night. And Nixon says, can't we
bleep
him?
Yeah.
And, you know, find whatever you can and just put it to him. And the guy says, he won't roll. We have tried it.
Mm-hmm. So this is nothing new. It's just now with the interconnectedness of the internet, it's easier to do. I mean, even getting to what's in your bank account, you know, what's in your wallet? Well, probably not cash anymore, which means that
which brings to mind the fact that Mubarak's bank account was frozen almost immediately.
Yeah.
Like he had no access. He had no right to that money. That seems odd to me.
Like a foreign government can say, oh, okay, we've just now decided, now that you're no longer a head of state, we can now declare that all of your gains are, you know, illegal and just freeze your money.
Yeah.
That seems a really...
I know, it really seemed sort of presumptuous to me.
Who did he anger?
Exactly. And who did Berlusconi anger?
Yeah.
Because he is now on the hot seat for... he's accused of raping a 17-year-old.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and he may go to, head of Italy.
Right.
Italy's got in an interesting spot right now because they are taking in their southernmost regions, they're taking in refugees from Tunisia that are trying to get out of there.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know if that has anything to do with Tunisia or not, but it happened at about the same time. Suddenly, you know, Berlusconi was being lampooned in the streets. There were placards out. There were demonstrators out. You know, all how we hate, you know, I don't know.
Yeah. Somebody.
You don't play ball and.
Yeah. And suddenly you're out. Back to Glenn Greenwald for just a moment, because there was a second piece that I wanted to discuss.
Oh.
This is a follow up on a story that we talked about a number of times a couple of years ago. Remember Bruce Ivins, the guy?
Oh, I'm so glad you brought that up. Yes.
Yes.
Yes. In fact, I wrote an early article about him saying he had been framed.
Yes. And Greenwald was one of the few columnists the odd thing about this story is that Greenwald was not as alone as he's been on the WikiLeaks story. New York Times, Wall Street Journal, Washington Post, senators on both sides of the aisle, even Patrick Leahy, who was one of the guys who got an anthrax letter, said that they thought the FBI's case against Bruce Ivins was flimsy at best. He was the guy the FBI declared after he committed suicide to be the man
after
who
he committed suicide.
Right.
When we have video, you'll see I've got air quotes.
That's yes. And, of course, this was after, for years, that they said that Stephen Hatfill had been the guy mm-hmm. sent the letters. And then, of course, they had to say, oh, well, sorry, here's $6 million. We made a mistake.
Mm-hmm.
In 2008, they identified the real perpetrator, Bruce Ivins. Oh, just conveniently happened to commit suicide a couple of days ago.
And then there is the one woman whose qualifications are flimsy at best,
right.
who was the only one who came out and said she had been talking to Bruce Ivins, and he had confessed all of these desires and dark behaviors to her.
Mm-hmm.
And she was the one who essentially said that he was the one.
Yeah. Well, yes.
She was the proof.
Yeah. Well, the National Academy of Sciences had been contracted by the FBI to review the science, the scientific and genetic findings that they had hoped to take to a grand jury.
Right.
And yesterday, February 15th, the NAS panel released its findings and said that it concludes, and I quote now, the Bureau overstated the strength of genetic analysis linking the mailed anthrax to a supply kept by Bruce E. Ivins,
mm-hmm.
end quote. The evidence far from definitive, as the FBI had mm-hmm. suggested. So, but, you know, since Bruce Ivins is dead, he can't respond.
We can close the door on that.
Yes. So anyway, just thought we'd point that out to you. And again, I'll put a link to that in the show notes so you can take a look at that. That is just one of the – because why is this significant? You remember in the wake of 9/11, they had the anthrax attacks, letters delivered to a number of key American lawmakers resulting in the most expensive and protracted criminal investigation in the history of the United States, which resulted in two men being accused. Bruce Hatfield had to be paid off by the government, or Stephen Hatfield, rather, paid off by the government. Bruce Ivins, dead.
He's dead.
Yeah.
Yes.
No. Anyway.
And since friends all said he was a really nice guy.
They never linked him to the letters. I mean, the scientific evidence was the strongest part of their case because the circumstantial evidence didn't make any sense.
No. Well, tomorrow we're going to talk about video games and movies that are coming up.
Oh,
and
memes.
And memes aplenty.
Yes. And until then, gee, this has been so long I've forgotten where the button is. There we go. I'm Derek Gilbert.
I'm Sharon Gilbert. Bye-bye, everybody.
Thanks for listening. PID Radio is a production of the PID Radio Network, a division of Gilbert House. Please visit our website at PIDradio.com, where you'll find show notes and links to connect with us on Twitter and Facebook. We wish to thank all those who help undergird and underwrite our ministry through prayers, feedback, and donations. To contact us directly, email us at radio@peeringintodarkness.com. Opening music adapted from The Alchemist's Tower by Kevin MacLeod, www.incompetech.com. Closing music, New Day Coming by Steve Grace, stevegrace.com. Content, copyright Gilbert House, and is licensed under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derives 3.0 Unported License. For more information, see creativecommons.org.
Gonna step up to the microphone, say it loud and clear. A better day is coming soon to get us out.